Project Independence is the aging in place initiative of the town of North Hempstead. Some of the many services we offer include fitness classes, community education, information, and referral. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services. Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan, and my co-host today is Ann Hirsch. And we're having a wonderful conversation with Steve Chaseman, who is with LICAD, which is Long Island Counseling of Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. No, Drug Dependency.
Very good. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
And he's right. It is the longest name of anybody.
Hence LICAD.
I like Karen much better. Karen of Karen.
Yes.
And Karen is with this Curtin. And she's involved with a program where you're bringing them back, hopefully, if that's what I'm
We are. We're giving them purpose.
And you the question that was asked when we went into break is cost. And cost, I'm sure, can be different for each people, so you don't have to go into it too much, which is the main thing. Sometimes insurance pays for it, and sometimes it doesn't, but that's going to have to be each individual situation.
And just to tag on to that was, is this more for a higher socioeconomic group, or are you able to take people that it doesn't matter what your incomes are? How does this work as far as who can use your services?
So right at the moment, we are an out-of-network facility that we do work with people to help them with the reimbursement. And we have a lot of success with that. But we are also, like I said, we're nonprofit. So we raise a lot of money. And that money goes back to programs and our staff trainings and our facilities. But it also involves scholarship assistance. So patients can do a very quick financial means test, and they can receive up to 50% of their treatment stay in scholarship form.
Do you need a medical referral to come to you, and does it help if you had a medical referral?
I think it helps. You don't need one to answer that question, no. And I think it helps from the perspective of getting reimbursement for your insurance if you've got medical necessity. If you can show that, you have treating professionals before who are referring with valid medical necessity, and then we also on the backside work with that through documentation and medical records to also help.
So would Medicare or Medicaid do anything as far as helping in this area?
At this time, they do not.
I think the larger conversation is, respectfully, is, you know, how do we treat substance use disorder and mental health? I mean, God forbid I had cancer. God forbid my friend Karen, who I know 15 years, would drive me to the Upper East Side of Manhattan, Sloan Kettering. I would be engaged with nutritionists and oncologists and a whole bunch of wellness professionals and medical doctors. And I would be given a treatment plan, which probably would include radiation. And ultimately, I'd be followed for years. And that would be covered by Medicare if I was over the age to be eligible. Why is it for as long as we can remember that people, particularly older Americans with substance use disorder, oftentimes you have privatized insurance companies or Medicare that are very limited in the amount of treatment that they allot for older Americans for mental health and substance use? Listen, we are living in a very transformed age. People are living longer. But there are challenges today at the height of a digital and technological revolution. I don't want to be, controversial, but this is current events. There's a distinct possibility in the news that U.S. pharmaceutical companies actually targeted certain populations unscrupulously and flooding our markets with very addictive opioids. And there are class action lawsuits going on across the country. And let's face it, older Americans sometimes do need chronic pain management. So I think there's a divide on how we traditionally deal with substance use as a psychiatric disorder, a substance use disorder.
Right. And well, how you said that, just to interrupt, you said that at the break, which was very important.
Yes.
Because these things help your emotions. Well, they calm them down. So you can have pain. I'm not saying you don't have pain. But indirectly, all of a sudden, your mind is being put to sleep in a nice way. Mm-hmm. That's the addictive part of it.
And we're all trying to feel better. Everyone's fallible. And life sometimes can be challenging. And we talked about it at the break that older adults sometimes in their life cycle, they're dealing with grief and loss and the loss of maybe some physical or psychological capacity. And I shared a personal experience where I see my parents also in the life cycle losing personal friends. So you're talking about death and dying issues of a peer group. So opiates were created, yes, for physical pain management, but they also anesthetize emotional pain management. And then again, you know, you deal with sleep disorder, you deal with anxiety, you deal with chronic conditions that require multiple medications. It's so important that we address substance use disorder and mental health in older populations, void of stigma, and that's the word. You know, we do not shame the diabetic for eating donuts. We do not shame the person with heart problems who's still smoking Marlboros and eating steaks. Even though they shouldn't. Human beings are all, we're all guilty as charged of making unhealthy choices
at times
in our life. But are people entitled to health care? Is this a right or a privilege? And it's something this country, I think, has struggled with in a long time.
As we're talking about the older population, are you also finding that these people that we're now mentioning that have these concerns are also alone?
Yes.
Absolutely. They're living alone. Their families are seeing changes, not necessarily sure what the changes are, not really attaching the decline in cognitive status. Maybe it's just their aging process. Mom fell. Well, they don't always say maybe mom fell because she's on so many medications and she's drinking because dad passed away 2 years ago. You know, they're not looking at it that way. They don't know how to approach it. It's very uncomfortable to ask your older adult mom or dad what's going on. It's a very difficult conversation to have.
And it's also not unusual today that families have, I'm going to use the word, splintered. They're all over the place. They're not physically close to one another. And therefore, you may make that phone call once a week, twice a week. How are things going? The answer is always fine. Hang up. And it's not fine. And it's easy to say fine because you'll get off my back and you'll leave me alone. And whatever it is, they may take it on themselves to do whatever or do nothing whatsoever. So that's a real challenge to get older, to be aging in place, but you don't really have a network.
And let's also address, and to your point, there are economic challenges that come. Are people living alone? I mean, here we are on Long Island. I mean, we're just, what, 5-6 years out of the worst recession since the Great Depression, where people lost life savings, where you have older Americans who are really forced to choose between housing or heat and medications and their wellness. This is also Long Island. I know both county executives, not only with young people, with older Americans, can they afford to live on Long Island, that there's adequate, affordable housing? I know my parents who are Long Islanders. You know, I know some of their friends who are just working class Long Islanders in their older years are forced to make really tough choices around some of their economic wellness. Mm-hmm. And that feeds anxiety, which feeds sometimes the need for medication like Xanax or Klonopin, and sometimes feed the need for self-medication so they're not living in a heightened state of anxiety.
And that's a shame. At the end of the day, when you turn around, mm-hmm. And it's because, and this goes back to Henry David Thoreau, you know, basically what people do. I mean, you have to have a bigger house. Just buy the house you could live in and put enough food on the table, and you don't have to put the next house and put the pressure on you, because what we do is then you're going out for a drink because you can't keep up, and you're behind on this meeting, you're behind on that, the mortgage is late, and it just, it's a cycle, it just goes crazy. Yeah. But here, we do have that, you know, who's got the upmanship, it just seems, and I see it a lot, which is like, you know, the bigger coda, you got the Gucci bag and all this, which attributes, it really does, because at the end of the day,
it's
you're
subtle.
Exhausted. So I have to go home and have my scotch or my vodka or whatever I have to have, and then one becomes two, and then you're lost.
Let's not make this a contemporary view of American society, but in this society, I think other cultures revere their elder population better regard. If you go to, in general, you go to other Central South American countries, European countries, I mean, the goal isn't to get your parents or out of your parents' house and keep them out. The goal is that families share the burden.
Right.
And that because someone is older in years, they've accumulated so much wisdom and respect And I think somewhere in the last couple of decades, or maybe more, we've lost the ability to really appreciate our older Americans as really elders of our tribe,
right,
so to
right.
speak. And that translates into healthcare, that translates into autonomy and respect, and it also translates as, unfortunately, in many cases, we disregard our older Americans.
This is my own personal opinion. You know, I was very close to my mother, so she was never excluded. I'm 66, so I have three daughters. I have six grandchildren. I personally think that's changing because most of my friends, there's a degree of respect. If one of my friends breaks their leg, their kids are involved. But in the 80 and 90-year-old group, my age person, and I find that with my friends, it's like, your mother what? Well, I saw her a couple of weeks ago. It's like, you saw her a couple of weeks ago? It's your mother. You know, I call my mother every day. You saw her a couple of... I mean, it's amazing. I agree. It's like, that was your mother. She took care of you for whatever she did, good or wrong. I mean, nobody's perfect, but she...
Right.
I think it's changed. That's my gut feeling. Like, in my circle of friends, it seems like everybody's respectful. I mean, there's always a fight, but nothing... But that has to be national.
Right.
Because it's a disgrace. I see that 100%, what you're saying. But I hope it's the past.
Yes, and there need to be policies in place that support our older Americans with adequate healthcare, with access to the treatments they need, and they don't have to pick between limbs, literally. Do I go put heat in the house because it's winter, or do I get my medications for the month?
Right.
That's not a political statement. And again, I'll say it, and I think it's something we've long contended with. Is healthcare a right or a privilege? We believe at LICAD, and you could come to our offices. If you don't have insurance, you don't have money, you get help anyway. That's the way our founders wanted it in 1956, and as long as I'm the executive and our current board of directors are there, that's the way it's going to be. If you're sick, you have a right to get well. And there's that Thoreau line, right? Most men and women live lives of quiet desperation.
Absolutely.
We encourage them to come forward and ask for help.
Right.
Sometimes, particularly with addiction, oh, too often there's a stigma and people don't ask for help because they think it's a moral, ethical failing.
But just going to throw in something, going to LICAD, it's not being announced. I'm going to LICAD. You're going to LICAD. Anybody's going to LICAD. Your friends don't have to know.
It's all confidential.
You can reveal it when you want.
And you are, by law, we are all licensed healthcare professionals in New York State, therefore bound by the laws of confidentiality and HIPAA compliance.
But you're not saying anyway. You can't turn around and say, oh, that's Billy right. was in or whatever. You know. And that is a stigma. Somebody doesn't want to turn around. Women get away with it. Because my daughter, when they're pregnant, all of a sudden it's like, you're not having a... Wait a minute. Are you pregnant? You know, so they don't have a glass of wine. But the person who drinks at a social... all of a sudden, it's like, you don't drink. What's the matter with you? It's ridiculous. I don't drink. It's like, what's the matter with you? I don't drink. What's the big deal?
Well, just to be clear about this, last year in America, 2018, there were 72,000 opiate-related fatalities. That's a Yankee Stadium and a half in 1 year. That's individuals. What we don't talk enough about, in the same year, 2018, 88,000 Americans lost their life to alcohol-related fatality. So alcohol remains the legal... And the most lethal drug in America and has been for many, many decades.
I'll give you one quick one and we're over. More people died in the Vietnam War, 50-some-odd people died, 50-some-odd thousand. It was 200-and-some-odd thousand died in this country, alcohol-related deaths.
Yes.
Four times what happened in Vietnam.
Right.
This has been wonderful at a time. When you have a great conversation, Christina Oliver, you do the best.
Thank you,
Mr. Pick everybody
Ryan.
On here. Thank you guys very much. You've been listening to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.